You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, joined in the studio by Shaka Hislop, and we're going to be looking back on the last game of the third round FA Cup match between Manchester United and Aston Villa. 1-0 it finished, United knocking Aston Villa out to advance to the next round where they will face Middlesbrough. Scott McTominay put United ahead after 8 minutes. Danny Ings and Ollie Watkins both had goals disallowed, but as it stands, Manchester United are still in with a shot at FA Cup glory. Let's talk about what we saw from Manchester United, though, today as we welcome in Stevie, Don and Jules to look back on this game in the FA Cup. But I will start with you, Shaka. Is Ralf Rangnick making any difference?
Not an awful lot. Listen, you get a win, you're in the hat for the next round, you have Middlesbrough. So job done. Against a decent Villa team who certainly had their moments and more than their fair share of the game. But in all honesty, this is not a Manchester United performance that would remind anybody of days gone by, or would lend anybody to believe that those glory days are coming back. They just keep ticking over. They just about get enough done yet again, which seems to be the story under Rangnick. Even when he does get it done, it's just about. Nothing overly convincing about the performance.
And is that putting it nicely, Stevie?
No, I think that's just a bit spot on. I certainly can't tell it any difference. I couldn't tell you what they're trying to do. They're just an average Premier League team, Manchester United, right now. Listen, they just about beat an average Premier League team in Aston Villa. A team that, not that long ago, were looking as though they could be in relegation trouble. But yet, Manchester United at home just about managed to beat them. No, I'm sorry. I don't know what Rangnick's trying to do. I don't see that he's doing anything. I don't see any change in Manchester United whatsoever. But as Shaka said, they got the result, and that's kind of what it's about at the end of the day.
What did you think of them today, Don?
I thought they were very bland, to be honest, Kay, like they were in the Wolves game. Wolves dominated them at Old Trafford last week. I thought Villa had a spell of about 15, 20 minutes where they were fantastic and looked as though they were going to get the equaliser. I think my takeaway from the game is how many players are lacking in confidence. I see Bruno Fernandes not playing as free as he has been over the last year or so. I'm looking at Mason Greenwood lacking in confidence. The biggest one was Marcus Rashford tonight. He looked as though he had the world on his shoulders. And we've all been there as young pros. Somehow you've got to get through it. But I think you saw in his body language tonight, he was trying. I've got to say, all the Man United players did try hard tonight. I thought Scott McTominay and Fred were probably Man United's best too. But the young players like Greenwood and like Rashford, they're trying to carry the club at the moment. You see Arsenal's young players and they're excelling. I think one or two Man United players are really struggling at the moment.
I mean, trying hard, Don. Does that tell us just how low expectations are?
Yeah, but we've all been there. Listen, I was in the Liverpool side when Stevie left, and you know we were in the same sort of place, and it got to a while, and then all of a sudden you fast forward a decade, and you fast forward another decade, and you go 28 years without winning a title. Man United are not far away from that at the moment in terms of when you watch them and how far Liverpool and Man City are going away from them. That's the worry. And Rangnick is trying to do his thing. He's trying to come in. He's trying to shake the personnel up. His side, in terms of his personnel, was a good side tonight. The system was good. But all of a sudden, you're just watching a team that's devoid of any sort of confidence, any sort of creativity, because you go into your shell when you're not playing well. Bruno Fernandes is the key example. When Bruno Fernandes is free, yes, he gives an awful lot of balls away, but he tries things. He tries the Hollywood passes. He's trying to play the killer pass. When you know someone's struggling who's a free player and a free spirit like Bruno Fernandes and a maverick, all of a sudden he starts playing safe. And then you watch Man United and the individuals are not safe players. They're free spirits, they're mavericks, they go and do what they can do. but you're watching a side, and the youngsters especially, because they need guidance from the likes of Cavani. Ronaldo didn't play tonight, but they need guidance off some of the experienced players. And you're watching Mason Greenwood, and especially Marcus Rashford, who, yes, they're all trying, but they're lacking so much confidence and identity.
Do you think that's what it is, Jules? Confidence and identity lacking at Manchester United?
Yes, I think there are a lot of other things that are lacking right now. I thought they started well, and maybe it was a good first 10, 15 minutes. And then after the goal, they said, OK, let's build on this and kick on and go for it. And yet, I thought Villa were the better side for the rest of the game. It was far too easy for them to pass the ball through the United midfield or what was kind of left of it, despite the good game that Fred and McTominay had. It's just not... I'm just not sure that what Rangnick is trying to do, whatever that is, like Stevie said, is understood by the players. That's the only thing. He tweaked a little bit his formation tonight. But again, structurally, I'm not sure we saw any sort of improvement compared to before. Again, it was too easy for Villa to put four or five passes right in the centre as well through that United team. They created far too many chances for a home game for a team like United.
Yeah, we're just taking a look at some of the odds for the top four. Maybe we could get Don to break it down in terms of percentages. The general consensus here, though, from you guys, it has been that United will make the top four because they have better players than the other contenders to the top four. Is that still something that you'd believe in, Xhaka?
In most circumstances, I would say yes. The team with the better players makes you top 10 or makes you top four in this circumstance, excuse me. But here's the thing, especially when you consider Arsenal and Spurs and the form that they're in, and certainly the buy-in that those teams have with their managers, Arteta and Antonio Conte, who's somehow transformed Spurs from what we saw in the early season to a team that is looking intent on finishing top four. Right now, I don't think there's that much in terms of squads, in terms of their capability. Names on Manchester United's team sheets are far better, but in terms of their quality, what you're seeing on the pitch from both Arsenal and Spurs is better than Manchester United's, and their managers are doing a better job than Rangnick is with Manchester United right now. So all that being said, that the names on Manchester United's team sheets stand for absolutely nothing in terms of this top four finish. I see them finishing behind both Spurs and Arsenal.
Okay, would you agree with that, Stevie?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we had something similar to this conversation about 4 weeks ago, and I was definitely one of those that said, you know, they've got too many good players not to win games. And that's why I thought they certainly would be the favourite to get that fourth spot. But looking at it now, what, 4 weeks later... what's happened to Ronaldo? What's happened to Fernandes, Rashford, Greenwood? The last two or three games, we're looking at relying on McTominay to not only dominate but to score goals. You can't get in the top four if that's the player that you have to rely on. So yeah, I absolutely agree with Xhaka. I'm not a huge fan of either Arsenal or Tottenham, by the way. Don't get me wrong. But they actually seem to play as a unit, and they actually look as though they've got an idea of what they're trying to do. Listen, they don't always do it, but at least they have some sort of structure. Manchester United right now, I can't see any structure whatsoever, and if they are to win games, it will be from one of the star players pulling something from a hat. But as I said, right now, even they don't look as though they're capable right now.
Don, Manchester United going to be beaten to a top four finish by one of the North London clubs?
I think they are, and I would put Arsenal favourites. I'm still not convinced, even though Tottenham have got an elite manager in Antonio Conte, I'm still not convinced if Tottenham can go the distance. Son, I believe, is out for another month. Window's still open. We don't know what's happening with Harry Kane. But you take those two out of the team, they're a very average side. You know, they've got good workhorses in midfield like Oliver Skip and like Højbjerg. He's got them a little bit more defensively organised, but I'm not sold on Emerson Royale at right wing-back or Ben Davis. Reguilon's their best left-sided player. So more work on the training ground for Antonio Conte to convince me they can get top four. So as it stands, I think Arsenal and West Ham are the two favourites. But if we fast-forward 5 days to the weekend, It's a North London derby, isn't it? So whoever wins that one could be favourites at the weekend to try and get top four.
The other thing that is key, and I know we'll talk about it in more depth in a moment, is both Arsenal and Spurs linked with moves in the January transfer window. Now, whether those come together or not, time will obviously tell. And though the conventional thinking is you don't get great value for your money in the January transfer window, in terms of what Spurs and Arsenal are looking for, and that's just somebody to give them some impetus in that top four push, I given the names that are linked with both those clubs, again, that is something that differentiates them from Manchester United. As of right now, we're not hearing much speculation around Manchester United and Ranić doing anything in this transfer window. So again, given everything that everybody's just said, added that other dimension to it, and you just can't help but feel that both Arsenal and Spurs are in a better position than United, and or will be at the end of this transfer window.
Thanks so much, Shaka. And tomorrow, I'm sure there'll be lots more Premier League talk as Ian Dark joins the show. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Dusan Vlahovic of Fiorentina leading the proceedings in the Serie A, leading goal scorers, but could he be heading to Arsenal? We've seen his name linked heavily. Jules and Don still with us. But Jules, how realistic is a possibility of this happening this month?
I think it's very unlikely, Kay. One, because I don't think that would be in his interest anyway to leave Fiorentina in January now. It's much better for him to wait for the summer. And you can expect him having a lot of offers and his agent preparing for something big in the summer. I don't know if Arsenal is something that he would consider. Because especially if they don't qualify for the Champions League for next season, he might want something already bigger than that and bigger clubs. So that would be very interesting. Certainly they will be looking for strikers, whether it's 9 January or in the summer, because like I said, he's going to go, because Nketiah is going to go, because Aubameyang is up for sale. So they have to sell, they have to sign strikers at some point in the next 6 months, more than one. So Vlahovic, as we've mentioned before, will be on the list with Calvert-Lewin and David and Watkins and Isak and all those names. And I think it would be much easier for them to do in the summer than in January. They will try, I'm sure. And same for a midfielder. They need a midfielder too. And that's probably even more urgent right now after the departure of Maitland-Niles to Roma, for example, and Partey to the African Cup of Nations, to get a midfielder now to go with Xhaka and Lokonga, more than really a striker right now.
John, Dusan Vlahovic, very good, isn't he?
Incredible. Incredible player. But he's making noises. He keeps getting linked with Arsenal every other day. And he keeps making noises that he's not ready for that move yet. I think he's being very smart. I think what he's doing is keeping his options open. He's probably looking around Serie A. I would imagine Juve would come in the summer. I think they would be certainly favourites for him. Listen, Fiorentina have got a history of selling to Juve, so they've got to try and stop that. But in terms of the player wanting to move to an Italian club, you would imagine Inter and Juve would be favourites. And he might just be evaluating where Arsenal are. If Arsenal finish in the top four and they get fourth spot, then maybe that's a move for him in the summer. But I don't see him leaving Fiorentina in this January window to come to England just yet.
Well, Fiorentina thrashed today by Torino. 4-0 it finished as we take a look at the table. But a lot of talk about Juventus right now, especially with the fact that Federico Chiesa is going to be undergoing surgery after suffering an ACL injury. A concern there for Italy. We'll get to that in just a moment. But how big a blow of that is it, Don, to Juve's challenge for the top four?
Okay, I was on commentary for the Roma game last night and I've still not recovered. It was one of the best games I've been involved in, commentating-wise, for a long, long time. I mean, I'll paint you the picture very quickly. Maitland-Niles landed the night before in Rome. Jose threw him straight back into the team, or straight into the side, should I say. Played an orthodox back four. He went away from his three centre-backs. Maitland-Niles for an hour and Chris Smalling, like all the Roma players, Tammy Abraham, another one, were incredible for an hour. and they're winning 3-1. 7 minutes later, Roma are down 3-4, and you're thinking, what a turnaround that is in 7 minutes. The twist then came when De Ligt got sent off with a handball, second yellow, and then Pellegrini, the Roman, missed the penalty. So it finished 3-4. And then Chiesa, in and around the hour mark, got tackled by Smalling in, I have to say, a brilliant tackle from the side, and Smalling put a brilliant block on. And he must have tweaked something then, because he tried to limp on. He limped on for about 2 or 3 minutes. Then he went for a ball on the halfway line. And I've done an ACL, and it was more or less a carbon copy of how I've done mine. And he twisted Chiesa. And as soon as he twisted, the camera work was brilliant, or not so if you're a Juve fan, but they caught his facial expressions just as he twisted away, and you could actually see the pain etched on his face. I didn't know it at the time, it was an ACL, but what a blow. I mean, I thought it might have been a medial, I thought it might have been something in and around the area where you might think a month, but an ACL, I mean, that's a horrendous blow for Juve and obviously Federico Chiesa.
Especially, obviously, Don, because of just how important he is to this Juve side. Arguably their best player right now.
Listen, he's sought after. I think Liverpool will monitor him. I think Chelsea looking at him. I think everyone around Europe are looking at him. He's Italy's best player. He's Juve's best player. He's got so much importance in the playoff for Italy. That's going to be a huge loss. I've seen Mancini tweeting today that he'll be ready for him when he returns. And everyone that I sort of followed on Instagram, all the Italian players, and Dybala, another one, an Argentinian player. And I think everyone just feels for him, because when they had their sort of mini winter break, if you like, everyone sort of went away for 4 or 5 days or a little bit longer. Chiesa actually stayed behind and he trained because he was trying to recover from different types of knocks. And he stayed behind when everyone else had a little mini break, and he stayed behind and he trained every day and he'd done double sessions. And you think, and this guy is so committed. And then all of a sudden, a couple of games back in, you do your ACL. I mean, horrendous luck.
Yeah, obviously for Juventus. And as you mentioned, Don, terrible news for Italy as well, because they've got those World Cup playoffs coming up in March, taking on North Macedonia. And then if they can get through that, the final, to see if they are going to be in Qatar 2022. On the Gab and Jules podcast today, Gab Marcotti spoke about it and how much of an impact Chiesa's absence will be for Italy.
I think the reality is, right, more macro from an Italy perspective, Chiesa or no Chiesa, if, and again, it depends how these games pan out, but, you know, Italy shouldn't need to rely on Federico Chiesa to qualify for a World Cup, right?
No.
That's the fundamental point.
No.
We wouldn't be in this position if Jorginho hadn't missed those two penalties. And as grateful as Italy fans will be for Jorginho for helping to deliver the Euros, this is the reality of it.
Yeah.
They had their chances. That said, yeah, obviously Chiesa is a massive value added. And while there are a lot of other young players who are coming through, and now we're all getting very excited about Aspadori and Scamacca and Berardi's played. All right, I just mentioned three Sassuolo players. Imagine that in one go. The reality is it's Federico Chiesa.
Yeah, it'd be tougher without him, for sure.
So how do you think that they're going to fare without him, Jules?
I think it's harder for Juventus without Chiesa, because we've been saying all season that collectively they're not very good. And when you're not very good collectively, if you've got someone on his own like Chiesa who can turn a game around or make something very special like Chiesa has done all season pretty much, or very often this season, then this is huge. Italy are different collectively. They're so strong. We saw that at the Euros, of course. They've got such a strong identity. They all know exactly what to do. And of course, it's hard to replace him because he's so good. But Berardi, just to name one name that Gab mentioned on the show this morning, has been so good with Sassuolo. He's been very good with Italy as well. You've got Insigne on the other side. He's got other options, Mancini. But it's still a big blow because he's been outstanding in 2021. And certainly is the kind of guy you want in your team, especially if that playoff final against Portugal happens. It would be such a clutch game that Chiesa is one of Italy's clutchest players, if not the most clutch player. So it'd be hard, but I think I'm more worried about Juve without him than Italy without him.
Thanks, Jules. And you can hear more from Jules on the latest Gab and Jules show, which dropped on Monday. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Just a clarification, there was an error in the broadcast of the Granada-Barcelona game over the weekend. A yellow card appeared, as you can see in the graphic, at the 79th minute. That yellow card didn't actually exist for Gerard Piqué. So later on, when the panel were talking about whether he should have had a second yellow card in this game, it was actually an error because they had thought, as the graphic showed, that there had been a first yellow. But we can confirm that Gerard Piqué did end the game without a yellow card. More good news for Barcelona, though, is that Barcelona and Samuel Umtiti have made an agreement to extend his contract until 2026. And this is good news for them because it means that Ferran Torres can be registered. Jules, I thought that they were trying to offload Umtiti, and now it seems that he's linked into getting Ferran Torres registered. How does this work?
This is how crazy the situation is, Kate, because it's not just now that they've tried to sell him. They've been trying to sell him for almost 2 years, Samuel Umtiti, because he's never going to play. And yet, him extending this deal with less money, so less wages, to mean that, which means that the wage bill of the club is now lower, which means that there's enough room, enough cap in that wage bill to register Ferran Torres with the contract that he signed already and has agreed to between the Coutinho departure and, believe it or not, the extension for Samuel Umtiti. Then that's enough room there for Ferran Torres to be registered. He's still awaiting a PCR, which I think is happening tonight on Monday night, to see if he can maybe take part in the Supercopa de España. But it's great news that somehow, even by extending someone that they never wanted to hear from ever again for the last 18 months, that's how you register your new signing. It's mental.
Hey, they've got to do what they've got to do. And Ferran Torres, we're hoping to see more of him in the Supercopa, which you'll be able to see on ESPN+. It is Barcelona taking on Real Madrid and Atletico taking on Athletic Club Wednesday and Thursday, respectively. And then it will be the final played between the winners of both to see who wins this year's Supercopa.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Day two of the Africa Cup of Nations, and in Group B, Senegal got a late win over Zimbabwe thanks to a Sadio Mane penalty in the 97th minute. We're now welcoming Colin Udo to talk more about what we saw today. Colin, it's great to have you with us. Listen, I want to start with the last game that we just saw, because we're talking about Senegal. So many are saying that they're favourites in this one, and I know they didn't have a full-strength squad today, but did they look like the favourites in this tournament the way they played today?
Well, look, thank you, Kay. Great to be back here after a while. Not that I enjoy seeing Shaka's face, but we'll get to that later. But yeah, Senegal look just the way Senegal have always looked. They're always dangerous. They're always favorites. And I think maybe just because they didn't have the full complement of the players, maybe they might have been a bit not the same. But to be honest, Zimbabwe also had the same problem of you know, players being upset with COVID. And I thought Senegal could have done better. But having said that, in the beginning of the tournament, teams always struggle at the start, especially teams that come with so much pressure. So I think I'll give Senegal the benefit of that. The fact that they got through this, got a win out of it, just tells me that they are still in for the long haul.
So, Colin, let's look back before we look forward then. Obviously, the opening day took place over the weekend. Cameroon, the host, getting off to a winning start. What stood out to you from the opening day?
I think it was just the energy. Look, there's been so much talk about Cameroon and whether they can host this tournament, whether it will take place or not. But the thing is, once the football starts, all of that just gets thrown into the bin. And there was so much energy in the stadium. That's what makes the African Nations Cup such a different tournament. You look at the Euros, you're expecting quality football, you're expecting great players. But when you look at the Africa Cup of Nations, what you see is you see colors, you see culture, you see the whole great football, sometimes quality football. Also, you also have some real dumb moments, some amateurish kind of football. So that's when you put all of that, that's what makes the Africa Cup of Nations so unique and so different from anything else you're likely to see. So I think that energy, that whole immersion into the tournament, I think it was fantastic for me.
And the games keep on coming. Many people looking out for Nigeria taking on Egypt tomorrow. What should we look out for in this game?
Oh, plenty of heart. Nigeria and Egypt have a long history at the Africa Cup of Nations. The last time they met in 2010, Egypt ran away 3-1 winners. But Nigeria have had the better of Egypt on a number of occasions. So, and you know, the way this is shaping up, Nigeria go into this with almost no expectations. They've just had a coach fired to the tournament. They have about four starters lost to injuries and club not been releasing them. So you have Nigeria going up there with their backs against the wall and very little expectations. So I think this should be a really, really good game against Egypt. But Egypt going to a slight favourite, don't be surprised. Nigeria might surprise them.
Colin, have you got a team that you're looking out for that maybe others should look out for throughout this tournament that maybe haven't been highlighted?
I'd say Mali. I think we're all sleeping on Mali, but they've got some really, really good players. And let's not forget that two tournaments ago, Mali, well, in 2012 and 2013, Mali got they finished third on both occasions. They stumbled a bit in the next two, but now they have Yves Bissouma, who's one of the best and most energetic midfielders in the Premier League. And during the qualifiers for the World Cup, they are one of the 10 teams that have made it through to the final phase of qualifying for the 2022 FIFA World Cup. So don't be surprised to see them make it to the World Cup, and don't be surprised to see them going almost all the way to at least the podium places at this tournament and maybe even win it.
So there you go. Don't sleep on Mali. And don't go away, Colin, because you're joining us from Extra Time, especially because you've been making fun of Shaka.
Yeah.
And that always gets you a pass to join us on Extra Time. And don't forget, you can always stay up to date with everything that's going on Extra Time by subscribing to our YouTube page. It's January, so we've got to talk transfers. Tanguy Ndombele hoping to move away from Spurs in the January transfer window. There's a feeling that this departure would be best for both parties, player and club. But let's talk about whether this is actually something that's realistic. Jules back with us here. Jules, how can this go ahead? Would there be interest for this player?
Well, I think if you look at the talent, of course, there was interest when he chose Spurs after leaving Lyon. The problem is, one, he hasn't played much. He hasn't played well, or certainly not well enough for the talent that he has. I think every club will know that there's been a lot of issues off the field with different managers. Jose Mourinho, that clashed. Nuno, that clashed. Conte, that clashed as well. The fact that he's on huge wages too, over £200,000 a week, which, again, unless you're a top club, and even right now, even top clubs are very reluctant to pay that kind of money, especially when you have to take a gamble, because this would be a gamble on Tanguy. It's very difficult. He really wants to go. I think he wanted to go last summer as well. He knew that he was not going to get on with Nuno, and that was the right thing to do. He wanted to leave even before that. The thing is, Spurs won't let him go for cheap either because they spent and invested a lot of money on him as well in terms of transfer fee, over £60 million. He's their most expensive player ever. So this is a very tricky situation. I think you're right. For both parties, it would make a lot of sense because they don't want him there. He doesn't want to be there anymore. There's no future, really. But good luck for trying someone who's ready to, you know, to offload him and pay the transfer fee as well, unless they go for a loan with an option to buy.
Stevie, what do you think of him as a player?
I think, unfortunately, what we've seen from him is just enough to keep you dangling on the edge of the fishing line. You know, he's one of these guys, it seems to me, that just when you're about to just push him aside and let him drop and forget about him, he'll do something or he'll put 20 or 30 minutes together and you go, well, maybe he's coming out of this. But he's had plenty of time, in my opinion. I don't think he has a future. I just don't see how he has a future at Tottenham. And the problem is, as we've just heard from Jules, if you've got a transfer fee and you're on such high wages, I mean, it makes it twice as difficult to go to a team that you might want to go to as well, because I'm sure some of the top clubs will have looked at him, same as me, and not been particularly impressed. So he looks to me as though he's going to be stuck at Tottenham for not just this window, but maybe the next one as well.
Don, would you agree with that?
Yeah, he's frustrating, Kerr, because, you know, skill-wise, talent-wise, he ticks a lot of boxes because he's unbelievably talented. But when you play in the Premier League, you've got to have more strings to your bow. You just can't rely on your talent. You have to be hard-working. If Spurs haven't got the ball and you're playing for Jose Mourinho or Nuno or Antonio Conte, they're going to demand something when you haven't got the ball. He's one of these number 10s that probably in the Premier League 10 years ago, 15 years ago, would have been outstanding. He could have played as a number 10. Managers 10, 15 years ago were carrying number 10s. They allowed him to be that maverick and they built a team around number 10s. The league's moved on. It's too fast. It's too quick. Everyone, when you haven't got the ball, needs to put a shift in. He's not that type of player. And as Jules said, I mean, I found it astonishing when Jules said that he's on over £200,000 a week. I mean, that is incredible. And, you know, you've got to question his work ethic as well, and not just him. There's two or three others at Tottenham that don't seem to want to put a shift in. The guy, I believe, I've read his backstory a few months, well, when he signed for the football club, and, you know, he was struggling to make it in French football. He got his act together, he dug deep, he worked hard, and all of a sudden he got his dream move to Tottenham, the most expensive player in their history. You'd like to think every single day when he comes into Tottenham, he should be bouncing into the place. He should have loads of energy to burn because he's made it. He's set for life. Now, all of a sudden, he's sort of like put the brakes on a little bit and got a little bit too comfortable. That doesn't work in the Premier League anymore.
And it certainly doesn't work, Xhaka, under Antonio Conte.
No, it doesn't. And listen, I think the guy summed up Ndombele perfectly well there. Every now and then you see a performance from him that suggests that he's a really good player and you do have a gem on your hands, but then he goes missing. And now here's the question, especially after having run-ins with the managers that he did, managers like Jose Mourinho, Antonio Conte, who takes that chance on him? And right now, none of the big clubs in Europe would. Nobody in the top half of the Premier League would. So are the clubs who have money and in the bottom half, and are bottom half of the table, and maybe are desperate for taking that gamble and bringing quality into their squads, how many clubs are there? And as we sit right now, I'm only thinking Newcastle. But then, given his history with some of the best managers in world football, how does he fit in? How does he acclimatise to sitting in a dressing room in the midst of relegation clash? And it just doesn't add up. So how Spurs get themselves out of this, I absolutely have no idea. They don't get the money back that they paid for him. If they want to send him off on loan, they're going to have to pick up at least 50% of his wages. So either you just kind of bite the bullet and accept that you're going to pay him and swallow that loss, or you find somebody who is at least willing to pick up some of it, because you're not going to get anybody picking up more than 50%.
Kay, well, Jose Mourinho said yesterday, sorry, Kay, Jose Mourinho called his team weak yesterday.
Yeah,
and
he did.
It wouldn't surprise me. It really wouldn't surprise me if, because Juve been backed and they've spent a lot of money in the summer window, the most in Serie A, and Jose spent a lot of money and he wants players in. It wouldn't surprise me if they went in with, as Jules said, a loan move for Ndombele with an option to buy. It wouldn't surprise me if Jose tried to make that move happen.
Oh, well, that's one to keep an eye out for. As too, is Adama Traore potentially going to Spurs as well? That's what some of the reports are saying right now, that that's where this player could be going, in talks with Wolves to secure the signing of him. And it's said, due to ESPN sources, as per them, he'd be a strong option at wing-back in Conte's preferred system. Obviously, there could be some competition here. Barcelona has been mentioned, and obviously his history lies there. But, Don, do you think this would be a good fit?
I think it would be. You'd have to learn the position. You know, I think he'd done some of his best work at Wolves when he was actually playing through the middle as a sort of number nine stroke number 10. He'd done all his work previously before that out on the right-hand side as an orthodox winger. So when you think Antonio Conte and you think wing-backs, he's obviously not sold on Emerson Royale, but then you think what he'd done to Victor Moses, and he turned him from a winger, from a right-back, if you like, into being one of the best wing-backs in the country at the time. And I think the 2 years at Jose was at Chelsea, and he had Victor Moses absolutely flying. So I think the end product is always a worry for me. When I watch Adama Traore play, I think, you know, skillful, tricky, pace to burn. There's no one in Europe that can live with him pace-wise. He just needs to start adding numbers, whether that's numbers with assists, numbers for goals. That's the only thing where he needs to improve on. And he's still young. You see his age there, 25. So he's got a lot of scope and a lot of room to improve. But for the money, if it's reported between 16, 17, 18 million pounds in today's terms, might be a good buy.
It could be. But Jules, we see Adama Traore linked so often to different clubs, and he's still so far stayed put at Wolves. Can you see this happening, him going to Spurs?
Yeah, and simply I think the big difference is that his contract is getting closer to the end, and I think Wolves know they know that he's not going to renew it. I think they've tried for many months now to sit him down and say, hey, let's commit to the future together, just to get his value as high as possible and not to be in a position where he will have 12 months left on his contract or 18 months. And then you will have to obviously sell him for a much lower price than maybe what he's worth it, or what you think, or what your value of him is, which is what we are now talking about. I think £25 million is around the value of him now, whereas easily they could have maybe got 40 if he had 2 or 3 years left on a contract. So that's why I think it's also interesting for Spurs not to have another Ndombele situation on their hands, where you end up spending a lot of money for someone where you're not completely sure what the end product will be. And for me, this is the case. It might work great, and he might become a great wing-back where he will spend more time attacking than defending, really. Or it might not work out at all. In that case, you can always keep him as a left-winger, or like Don said, more centrally. But if the idea is to try to transform him into a right wing-back, it's a gamble, another one, again, that you can't commit too much money on.
Yeah, let's see if there will be some ins and outs in January at Spurs. Check out our Transfer Talk page. We do know Antonio Conte is planning a clear out, but we all know how difficult it is to do so in the month of January. More news on all the ins and outs over there. And more Carabao Cup for you. Spurs back in action and looking to turn things around in the Carabao Cup against Chelsea, Liverpool and Arsenal the following day, Wednesday and Thursday. Both of these games available on ESPN+.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Well, that is all we've got time for on the latest edition of ESPN FC. But if you'd like to stick around and see if more fun will be made of Shaka, then make sure you join us for extra time.
It's uncalled for as well.
I know. You've actually been warned it's going to happen, Shaka. People are going to make fun of you today on Extra Time.
Why is that? Why? What have I done?
All right, welcome into Extra Time. Shaka Hislop here with me, Kay Murray, in the studio. Stevie Nicol, Don Hutchison and Colin Udo with us. And you can see that Stevie and Don are delighted because they know that Colin has already been making fun of Shaka.
Yes.
And they are all for
yes,
uncalled
Colin.
For. Totally uncalled for. I'm sitting there quietly, minding my own business.
Yeah.
Leave Shaka's face out of this.
Well, Shaka, you know you deserve it, Shaka.
What have I done?
Colin,
what?
I like Colin.
Shaka, what have you done?
I'm liking Colin.
Oh. This is a great start. Would you like to come back tomorrow, Colin? And the next day.
No.
All right. First question is for Colin from Jerome Ashkenazi. He says, welcome to the circus, Colin. Are there any burgeoning talents in AFCON that will make a splash in a big league in the coming years?
Well, look, the thing is, it's so different these days, unlike in the past where you had, it was almost like you didn't have the kind of resources that are available now. But these days, it's so easy. You can see everybody, whether it's at the AFCON or before. So you find that most of the time that you would look at 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds, they're already in Europe and they're coming back from Europe to Africa. So I wouldn't point, look, there are a number, like Morocco's chair, but they're already in Europe. So it's hard to say this person will make a big splash in the coming years.
Yeah, so you have to all keep your eyes open and then you can see and decide for yourself who could be making a big splash. Don, the next question's for you. Which signing is United's number one priority? A defensive midfielder or a world-class box-to-box midfielder?
Well, I think that question's a good one, and I think you can buy all of those positions in one player, and that's Declan Rice. I think Declan Rice is everything. I was talking to Dion Dublin today and we were talking about the box-to-box number eight midfield players of yesteryear, and people like Steve McMahon and Brian Robson and Patrick Vieira and Emmanuel Petit and Paul Ince. And, you know, and Stevie will tell you, back in the day when you played as a central midfield player, you didn't have all these initials on your back. You just had whatever number you got and you played the position. And I look at Declan Rice, and in games he can be a holding midfield player. The next moment he could be a number eight. The next minute he's driving forward as a number 10. I think, and I was saying to Dion today, unless I've missed anyone out, I think the bright young talent, the two of them, in my opinion, I think is going light years ahead of anyone else, unless I've forgot someone. I think it's Jude Bellingham at Borussia Dortmund and Declan Rice at West Ham. Those two kids are going to be, and are at the moment, but going to be absolutely phenomenal.
Well, let's talk more about Manchester United. Harry Cusano wants to know, Stevie, everyone is quick to blame the players at United, but you've often said, give them an excuse to underperform and they will take it. Has the upper management provided them with that excuse?
Absolutely. Yeah, when the upper management has been getting bashed for as long as I can remember now, and while that's happening, then the players just seem to be letting them take it. And even when they don't perform, then upstairs and Ollie in particular will get bashed again. And so they've really come under no pressure whatsoever. The players, 2.5 years? Really? They've just coasted along, not producing consistently what they're supposed to be at Manchester United. And so they don't look as though, as a group of players, they've done anything to take any pressure off anybody. Because the only way they can do it is by performing on the field. And they haven't done it consistently for a long, long time. So, they don't look that bothered.
Colin, don't think extra time's so easy to just make fun of Shaka. You also get some difficult questions as well.
Didn't make fun of me in extra time. Made fun of me during the show.
During the show.
I'm such a really sure that it made fun of me. He's all sensible.
Colin, are you ready? It's a difficult one. It's from Ritwick. It says, for Colin, Salah, Drogba or Eto'o? Start one, bench one, drop one.
Oh, my word. Why does anybody give you something like that? Stevie should take that.
They'll all take it after you because it's a great question, but you have to answer first, Colin.
Yeah, okay, so I'd go with Eto'o. Just because he's been one of the highest goal scorers in African football. The AFCON Nations Cup, he's been top scorer multiple times. Bench Drogba, and unfortunately Salah hasn't done much at AFCON, so I'd sell Salah.
Can't believe that, Stevie. Are you going with that?
I tell you what, it's very difficult to get away from Samuel Eto'o.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Samuel Eto'o does, you know, listen, Salah's a goal scorer. But after that, you know, could you play him as a number nine? Could he hold the ball up? I mean, you know. So I'm afraid I'm going to have to agree with Colin.
Shaka, I mean, bear in mind, Colin.
By the way, it's got to be one of the, it's got to be one of the best questions we've ever had.
Yeah.
Because
it's a great question. I'd like more of these, by the way.
Stevie's shoulders are shaking.
Wow.
This is a great question. Is it going to get Shaka to agree with both Colin and Stevie?
It is. I can't get away from starting Samuel Eto'o.
He's bottled it.
With everybody. No, Samuel Eto'o is my starter. I'm going bench Drogba and drop Salah just because I think Drogba gives you something so different from the other two. So if you had to call, if for whatever reason it's not working, Drogba just gives it such a different look than Salah.
So, Don, if Shaka's bottled it, what are you saying?
Oh, well, I'm going to be in the minority here because I'm going to be the biggest loser. I'm going to start Drogba. I'm going to bench Salah. And there's no room for Eto'o.
Oh, my goodness.
What?
Don, get out.
Wow.
Just joking.
Wow. You're right. Get out. Get to court.
I'm just taking the pressure off. Shaka, this is what I'm
just
doing as a teammate.
Contrarian.
As a former teammate, Kay, I'm taking the pressure off Salah so Colin can have a go at me instead of having a go at Shaka. That's a good teammate.
All right, well, don't worry. You guys have got some tough questions too. Right, Don, the next one's for you. Don, please explain how Rafa still has a job. We look absolutely dreadful. 2 wins in 13, and he's trying to get rid of one of your best players, being Digne.
How do you answer that? Because how he's still in a job, I'll never know. And I said, Kay, I said, whenever it was a year ago, this will end in tears. And it was nothing to do with Rafa's red side or blue side, because I've done that as a player. I just felt it, a strange fit. And when you're at a club like Everton, you can't have a record of 1 or 2 wins inside 3 months. Trying to sell Lucas Digne because you've had a bit of a fallout. We don't know what the fallout is. Lucas Digne might have been passionate. That's good. There's young kids like Anthony Gordon and Lewis Dobbin are sort of saving Rafa a little bit at the moment. Yes, I mean, mitigating circumstances, yes, he's had so many injuries. The only good thing about the 3-2 win the other day against Hull is I believe he got minutes into Andre Gomez, he got minutes into Andros Townsend, Damari Gray was excellent, and he started getting minutes into some of his better players, if you like. But Everton can't be where they are at the moment, and Evertonians are going to be happy. No way, no way. So Rafa at the moment is a lucky man, and they've got Norwich at the weekend. Everton. And I'm afraid it's one of them games. If they don't beat Norwich, then that could be it.
All right. And to another question for you, Don, but Shaka as well. So I'll start with Shaka. Is it time for Newcastle to call Big Sam?
No, God, no.
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 No. No. No.
Yes.
Newcastle will be all right. We'll be okay. That wasn't me who said yes. Was that Steve?
Colin.
Or Colin? Colin.
No. Yeah,
oh,
Colin said
goodness.
Yes.
Colin, no. Delete Big Sam's number out of your phone.
There's going to be Colin, get out. No, I'm only joking. All right, Don, is it time? Why?
No.
No,
well,
right,
why?
No.
Anyhow, he's been through the door 2 minutes and he's not even had a January window yet. Come on. If we beat Watford at the weekend, one of the worst sides in the Premier League, Watford, defensively. If Emmanuel Dennis doesn't play, we've got a massive chance of beating Watford. Then all of a sudden, Burnley gets sucked in. Watford are sucked in. Norwich have already gone. We can do this. Come on, Shaq. We can do this.
We can do it, Dom.
Hold on
we
a
can
second.
Do it. We'll be all right.
Second.
We'll be all right. Don't worry. We'll be all right.
Go on, Stevie.
Okay. Hold on, Don. A few days ago, we were on, you and I were on, and you were talking about Eddie Howe when he got the job.
Yeah.
You panicked because he's averaged like 65 goals a season defensively since he's been in the Premier League, something like that. So how can you take him over Big Sam, regardless of whether you like to watch the way they play or not?
He gets the
no
job
chance
done.
Of staying
because
up.
Because Big Sam, Stevie, the project with Big Sam, and I love Big Sam, and the project, and normally what happens with Big Sam is he comes into the job, he gets a team safe, which is fantastic, but yet he's always sort
Who
of like
cares?
Then kept on.
Get the team no, safe I'm and not. Then fire him. Who's bothered? Don't care.
No, you can't just get a man in, keep him safe and fire him.
Well, you can't have a project in the championship.
By the way, if you've got that much money, you go, excuse me, Sam, I want a favour. I want to keep us up, and if you do, I'll give you the biggest bonus you've ever had in your career just to keep us in this league. And if you do that, I'm just telling you that you'll be going back home at the end of the season.
That smacks
but no,
of Newcastle.
No, let's get Eddie Howe and let's lose another 1,000 goals and we'll go down.
That smacks of Newcastle.
But we don't want
that
Sam.
That smacks of Newcastle turning into Watford all of a sudden, sacking managers. We don't want to be a Watford.
We're talking about Newcastle. We're talking about Big Sam in Newcastle. Don't bring Watford in here.
We can't just sack managers
every
2 minutes.
Who's going to keep them up, Big Sam or Eddie Howe? And you're saying
Eddie Howe.
Eddie Howe. I don't think so.
Eddie Howe. Eddie Howe.
Yeah, right.
Howe? No, Colin, it sounded like you wanted to chip in
exactly.
then.
Oh, yeah, I mean, like I'm saying, you can't have a project in the championship. So get him in, stabilise the team, and then you can bring in whoever you want to bring in.
Do you guys realise Big Sam was in charge at Newcastle? Big Sam was in charge at Newcastle about 7-8 years ago, and the Newcastle fans were throwing their season tickets on the pitch in disgust at the standard of footy they were
Who
watching.
Who cares if he keeps
well,
them
Newcastle
up?
Fans, because we're throwing the season tickets.
So what? They get rid of them at the end of the year, they stay up, and they'll all come back.
There's no guarantee.
Bothered.
All right.
Bothered.
Give it a Colin.
Okay. For the guys, I'll ask you, Stevie. Do players ever think that certain referees have a bias against them or their teams, or do they just get on with the game?
No, I think every now and again you do think there's a referee that's just against you. Every single thing seems to go the other way. I mean, I wouldn't think Emery just holds a grudge forever. Just now and again when things happen, you think, is this guy doing this on purpose? Or just now and again you think that, but I think at some stage most players have had somebody who they think kind of goes against them.
Yeah, Ritrick already won extra time tonight with his question earlier about start one, bench one, drop one. So just while we've still got Colin here, I want to get this question to you, Colin, from Lord Rhino, who says, for Colin, the Super Eagles are my favourite African national side. Tell us your top three Nigerian players of all time.
Oh, boy, they're going to get me in trouble. They are going to get me in big trouble.
That's what we try to do on this show.
Oh, goodness me. Okay, so I'm going to go all the way back, and I'm going to start with the former captain, Christian Chukwu. He was the captain who led Nigeria to the first ever Africa Cup of Nations in 1980, and he became a coach, but he was a great defender. I mean, you could call him the chairman because he used to go from back to front and everything. Second, I would go for Nwankwo Kanu. I mean, I don't think I need to say any more about that. And the third one I would go for would be the goalkeeper, Vincent Enyama. I mean, he was such longevity and the great thing he did and great goalkeeping. I think one of the best goalkeepers Africa has ever produced. Now I'm going to get in trouble, I know that.
Not by Shaki, you know.
Oh, that's right, that's right. All's forgiven between me and you, Colin. You mentioned Enyama, you're all's forgiven. That's all right.
No,
that's
all right. Of course. Don't worry, I'll take you out to lunch next time in Bristol.
All right, no problem.
He's gone full circle and made a goalkeeper number one.
That made me happy. Yeah,
okay.
There you go. Yeah.
So you guys, it's fine. Everything's fine now. Shaka, last question's for you. Shaka, you are famous for not paying for air conditioning. And sweating heavily in the summer. Do you pay for heating in the winter?
Let me just see, hold on. I do have air conditioning, but it's loud.
But do you pay for it?
Well, yeah, yes, I pay for it, but it's loud. So when we have to go on air, I have to turn it off.
Right.
Because it comes to the mic.
How does Ezio say that you're sweating heavily?
Because I'm sweating. So when we're doing the show from home, right? We're doing the show. Okay, you should see. Honestly, I am chucking up. In the middle of the summers here, I have to turn off this AC unit because it's too loud. And I kid you not, I am just sweating like never before.
But then, as far as the second part of the question is, the heat. My house is hot.
It's hot.
My house, well, even in the winters, I ain't playing that. My heat is turned all the way up.
Fair enough. Stevie.
What's Stevie moaning about there?
No, well, I'll tell you what, I've got a mate in Liverpool, right? If you fly him over, he knows exactly how to get into your meter and have some fun with it, and then you won't have to pay for it.
Oh.
Does it cost you a flight? A couple of nights?
I don't know what you're talking about, Stephen.
Get a wee silver paper out, get it into the meter. Bob's your
uncle. That was extremely illegal, Stephen.
I've done it myself.
I don't know what you're talking about.
We do not condone illegal behaviour here.
I've never seen that man, Steve Nicol, in my life. I've never seen that man in my life.
I can't believe that. Who's that guy in the top corner? Anyway, we
had one of his mates from Liverpool come on and put him in the show.
Yeah, we thank Don, we thank Colin, we thank Shaka. Not even sure who that guy is at the top, but thanks to him anyway. Thanks to you for joining us tonight on Extra Time.
I'm starting to sweat.
I know. Join us again tomorrow. Where's the aircon?